Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. So I've traveled around many parts of Georgia and even to the different parts of the state of Louisiana, but there's one section of my own home state that I haven't yet explored on Small Town Podcast until today. Today, we visit a small town in North Georgia whose history is on full display at City Hall. Not every City Hall can boast its own moonshine distillery. And we talk with a mayor who keeps moving away from the city life until he made this small town his permanent home. We're going to go talk with Mayor Mike Eason in the small town of Dawsonville, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by Public Software. While the name may sound new, Public Software has been helping small towns, cities, counties, and utility districts for over 50 years. They provide integrated software to help manage utility billing, accounting, and additional services. They help organizations accurately calculate, collect, and distribute money, print and mail statements, and effectively manage budgets. Some say they are a B2B company, but Public Software is focused on H2H, human-to-human connections. With decades of proven success and reliable service, let them make your software applications work seamlessly with the human interactions in your community. You can learn more about Public Software and what they can do for you and your organization by visiting www.publicsoftware.com. That's www.publicsoftware.com. Public Software. Strong relationships, stronger communities. All right. I am in a very fancy city council chambers in the small town of Dawsonville, Georgia, and I'm joined by the man who runs meetings in this very room, Mayor Mike Eason. Mayor Eason, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, and welcome to Dawsonville.
Thank you so much. This is I'm going to ask you how long this has been here. Actually, I'll go ahead and do that now, because sometimes we kind of set things up by talking about where we're sitting. Sometimes I'm in an older, historic, restored building. This time, this place looks new and fancy, and I noticed there's some additional things as part of this building that most city halls, small towns or big cities, have. So if you could tell us a little bit about this building before we get into your story.
Sure. This building was designed as Thunder Road back in the early 2000s, and they had some financial difficulties during the recession, and the city was able to acquire the building and place it into service as the city hall. And we've got a couple of other things here that are pretty unique. The Georgia Racing Hall of Fame is here.
Yeah.
We also have another part of the building, which has something in it called a moonshine still and distillery.
I've heard of moonshine.
Yes. Dawsonville is fairly well known for moonshine, as you imagine.
We'll get into that a little more later, but I just thought that was unique to have a moonshine distillery in the same building as City Hall.
Well, Mayor, don't you have a distillery or moonshine still in your City Hall?
Not in City Hall.
Got some outside of City Hall, right?
I'm not at liberty to discuss the location of it, It's not maybe not even in the city limits. But
we keep ours where we can get to it quickly.
I noticed that. That was very interesting and a little unique, I think. Very unique. I shouldn't say a little.
We may be the only City Hall in the world that has a moonshine distillery.
Until we hear otherwise, we're going to say that you are.
I think so. I think that's fair.
Well, I like to set the stage a little bit sometimes when there's a unique aspect of the location we're in, and that's certainly unique. But let's get into your story. So I'll start with the same question I always start with all my guests. Were you born in Dawsonville, Georgia?
No.
No. Well, where were you born then?
In a hospital.
Okay. In what city or just outside of what city?
In Birmingham, Alabama, in 1950.
Okay. And born and raised there, or did you move somewhere else soon after?
I was born there and went to elementary school and then moved to Atlanta, Georgia. My mother was a native of Palmetto, Georgia, which is in South Fulton County. We moved up there in 63, and I went to elementary school, finished there, and went to high school on the south side of Atlanta in Sylvan Hills High School, which no longer is a high school. It's a middle school now.
Okay, but it's still there, same campus? Probably a slightly different building?
Let's say this, the ground is still there. It was up on a hill, now it's flat. So they rebuilt it a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I was a Sylvan Hills Golden Bear back in the 60s, graduated in 68.
Go Golden Bears.
Yep.
All right. Well, what'd you do after high school?
Went to college for a year or so over at the University of Alabama when Bear Bryant was still there, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
So I was there for a little over a year, and then I wound up coming back to Georgia. Finances were pretty tight back then with my family. We're not from a ritzy family. We lived in apartments most of my life. And I wound up coming back and getting involved working for the city of Atlanta, doing some surveying and going to night school, and wound up with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation in 1971.
Okay. Went into law enforcement.
Yes, sir. Not sure exactly why, but I did.
No particular inspiration? Just
I was in college with a bunch of different people that were studying, and they were in law enforcement. So I joined up. They encouraged me to sign up, and I went to work at 20 years old as a narcotics investigator, special agent with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
So that was a lot of people will start at a local law enforcement agency in town or sheriff's office and then maybe go into being a trooper or GBI agent, but you went straight into the Georgia Bureau.
That's correct. I went straight in. Okay. I was part of the first major narcotics squad the GBI ever had, worked undercover narcotics for several years all over the state.
Well, I certainly don't want to ask you to divulge anything you shouldn't, especially since I'm going to broadcast this recording. But what were some of the things you could tell us about your career and what you did? Were you in narcotics investigations your entire career, or did you shift around some?
I moved around a good bit. I had a funny story with the mayor of Moultrie one time. I was down there at an RV rally with my wife. And he was the speaker. He wound up sitting at my table just by chance. And I was telling him how much I enjoyed the facility there and at Spence Field, the old Air Force base down there. And he said, I said, you remember when the barracks were out here and they had housing in them? And he said, yeah. I said, well, I bought my first LSD there. He looked at me like he didn't know what I was talking about. And my wife, of course, injected and said he was working undercover at GBI. So, you know, but I try to have a good time even when I'm here sitting on this in the council chambers and enjoying myself.
Now, you started because you said you worked in the city of Atlanta, so you were living in Atlanta specifically when you started there?
I lived in the south side of Atlanta, grew up in the Sylvan Hills area, and then wound up living in Riverdale and where I got married. I'm living there. And then we moved to Cumming, Georgia in 1976, and my wife was a native of Coal Mountain, Georgia, which is a little community just north of Cumming and about probably 12, 14 miles south of where we are now.
Right. I think I passed through that area as I came up here.
Oh, yeah. But during my career at GBI, I did a lot of things. I worked intelligence. I worked a lot of smuggling cases, air and marine smuggling. I worked public corruption for about 10 years. I worked major cases throughout the state. I supervised from about 76 or 77 through the rest of my career. So when I got in, there was 100 GBI agents. And in 3 years, there was 200 GBI agents. So a lot of us had to be moved into management positions because we had 4 or 5 years of experience while a lot of these didn't have any. And a lot of the GBI agents that were on the payroll when I started were older, and they retired fairly soon. At one point, you had to be a trooper to be a GBI agent, and they changed that because it's hard to work undercover in a high school or in a small town if you're 45 years old and got slick cut hair. And, they've hired people.
Don't quite fit in like
they
that.
They hired people that might fit in. Matter of fact, my hair was down on my shoulders during that period of time,
which
was not my personal desire, but my instructions.
It was for the job.
I worked all over Georgia. I worked in a lot of cases throughout the state, supervised a lot. I wound up retiring in the Medicaid fraud unit down in Atlanta. I did a lot of special events. I was in charge of all venues and villages for the Olympic Games in 96. I was in charge of security for the Democratic Convention in 87. I worked Klan rallies almost every weekend somewhere in the state during the 80s. So I just got where I didn't like sports, Democrats, Klan, anybody that protested. And if the Republicans or Libertarians had come, I wouldn't like them either.
Well, unless I'm about to uncover something fraudulent, at some point, since you're the mayor of Dawsonville, you moved to Dawsonville. You said you were in the coming area.
Oh, you have to live here to be the mayor? When did they start that rule?
Unless you have a very, very different. I mean, you've got a distillery in your city hall, so maybe your city charter is very different than all the other ones in Georgia.
It's a little different than other places.
Yeah.
Now, my wife and I moved up here in 2012.
Okay.
Funny story, we were sitting in our house one day and somebody knocked on the door and asked if we wanted to trade houses. So we were living in Cumming, and so we traded houses and moved up here.
I'm going to have to dig into that a little bit because that just seems what do you mean traded houses?
Well, you want to trade houses.
I mean, I know what you mean by trade houses, but it was just somebody that wanted to move there and offered you their house.
Yes, that's correct. They wanted to move to where I was living and didn't want to live where they were living, so it turned out to be a good opportunity for us.
And you didn't want to live where they wanted to live?
Well, I was the police chief in Cumming for a few years, too.
Okay.
And we'd lived there while I was the chief, and we just decided it was time to move out. When I moved to Cumming, my recollection is there were 4 traffic lights in the county and about 20, 22,000 people.
A little bigger now.
Well, they've got probably 22,000 traffic lights and 250,000 people, so things had changed a lot.
Yeah.
So it was a welcome relief to move up here where we technically don't have a traffic light in the city. It's at the city limits because of the high school road.
So kids can
get across Highway 53. So there's no traffic light here. And the population here is in the low 20s.
I was going to ask what it was. Low 20s?
Okay. That's the county, not the city.
What's the population of the city? Because I go by the city population.
The census says we got about 2,600 people, I think.
2,601, barely one traffic light if you count the one by the school.
Correct. But we do have about 2,900 registered voters.
Okay.
Which the census was in 2010, and I've already done my census. I did it today. I got my thing in the mail. Took me 4 minutes online. So complete your census.
Well, because that's a good public service announcement.
Yeah.
Everyone go do your census.
It's real easy.
And in a small town, it means so much more because everybody's got to get counted.
It counts
for representation. There are certain grants that are based on population numbers, all those formulas we get for LMIG and some of those infrastructure grants, things like that. So everybody do your census if you haven't already.
Absolutely. Please do.
Thanks for that public service announcement, Mayor.
You're welcome. Since you did most of it, you're welcome.
Well, since you came up to Dawsonville, kind of I hear a theme. I want to get away from the crowd. So you've gone a little farther north each move,
yes,
and ended up in Dawsonville. How did you get involved in local government? Because again, since I introduced you as the mayor, number one, you did have to move up here, which we finally figured out the house trading situation that got you to be a resident. How did you get involved in local government? What drove you to do that?
I was coerced to to serve as the interim mayor.
Would it surprise you that you're not the first person on this podcast or that I've met even outside the podcast that used the term coerced into how they got involved with local government?
My career had some buckets in it, and this was not in my bucket. Matter of fact, my bucket was nowhere near this. But in November of 17, I was asked if I could serve as the interim mayor here. They had officially removed the mayor from office for misconduct, I wasn't actually aware of. I'd been traveling with my wife, and then some things happened, and I really hadn't caught up with the news.
You weren't on council?
No, it's just sitting in my house.
So not on council at all.
No, sir.
And through a series of events or incidents that I'm not really going to dive into here, the mayor was removed, I assume, by the council.
Correct.
And then that same council, instead of choosing one of their own, because usually the mayor pro tem kind of becomes the acting mayor until there's a special election or the regular election if it's close enough. So why did that not happen?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to ask them. I didn't ask them that. But two of the council members were timing out. There had been an election, and two of them were going to leave.
I got you.
So they had two that were staying. One of them, the mayor pro tem, and another council member. And the two new ones hadn't taken office in November. They didn't do it until January. So they asked me if I would consider doing it for a four-month term.
Okay.
And I said, well, let me talk to the council and the lawyers and let me make sure they want me.
Right.
Because I don't want to come if two of you want me and not all four of you. So all four of them.
That
I
makes
met
sense.
Individually with, well, the groups of two with them.
Yep.
And the attorney, which, by the way, the attorney was the city attorney when I was in the city of Cumming, and they were served as our solicitor, too. So I knew them.
Okay.
Actually, I'd call junior varsity football games with him when the kids were together.
So y'all went way back.
And so it turned out fine, and it was a four-month sentence. So I could step. Why do you laugh?
Now, do you say sentence because of your law enforcement background or because you view a political term as a sentence? I'm not going to disagree if it's
both.
The second, to
both.
Be perfectly honest. There are some
both.
Aspects of it.
It's okay. A sentence, although in law enforcement there are things like parole and early release and good time. In
you don't get that.
Sense, there's not
no,
an early
no.
release.
Well, now, so was the you said that was November of 17.
Yes, sir.
If the mayor had stayed in office, was that an election year that year?
No, sir, it was not.
Okay, so why a four-month term until a special election could be held?
That's correct.
Okay.
And it was pretty lucrative at the beginning. The pay was $2,000 a month for the mayor. I thought, that's pretty neat. So I walked into these chambers on December 4th, and the agenda had me as being appointed the mayor, interim mayor, like item 28 or 30 on the agenda.
Yeah.
And they made a motion to move it to item 2.
Well, that was nice of them.
Yeah, it was nice. And so they came down.
They probably expected you to handle item 3 on.
Oh, you're correct.
It was immediate.
I had to do so. Yes.
So you came into a meeting and they moved that up on the agenda.
And they swore you in right away. They swore me in, didn't give me a gavel, but I guess they put me on the payroll. So item number 9 or 10 on that agenda was a reduction in the mayor's salary.
Well,
it went from $2,000 to $600 a month. So
you got a pay cut within literally minutes.
Literally minutes of being here, and I guess that's the appreciation they had for me. So I accepted that because I couldn't vote.
Well, right.
There was no tie. It was unanimous to reduce my pay.
They should have at least done that one before they appointed you.
They could have.
That way you had an opportunity not to get sworn in after you knew what was coming. So.
That's true.
Now let me ask this, because under normal circumstances, this one's unique.
Really?
I've had folks I've interviewed that became mayor because they were on the council, they were pro tem, and then they became the acting mayor and then ran. This will be the first time that someone's been appointed mayor by a council without being on the council. I'm sure it's happened other places. It's just the first time I've interviewed someone for the podcast where that was how they came to be. So my normal question would have been, what motivated you to run for council and then became the mayor? But in this case, that question doesn't apply. So I guess I have to ask it this way, and you just have to do your best. Why do you think they chose you? Now, I know there's 2,600 people. What do you think it was about you, or at least what did they tell you it was about you that said, hey, you're the one that needs to come? Because that's kind of interesting circumstances. And so to ask anybody to come and stand in during those times, that's just interesting. But what do you think it was about you?
Well, I knew one council member. I knew the city attorney, and the council member that asked me had known me most of his life. He knew about my background. You know, I'm a pretty straight up person. I tell you what I think, and I'm going to do the right thing. And they were looking for a change because the operation of the government had drifted aside from the doing the right thing. That's why the mayor was removed. So it was just a matter of, they wanted somebody who was going to do the right thing for a while till we got a new mayor.
And you may have gone back and forth this answer based on item 9 or whatever item it was in the agenda where they cut your salary by 2/3 just about. That was 2017, November 2017.
Yes, sir.
The interim fill was for 4 months, and then there was a special election. So I'm assuming, since I'm sitting here talking to you as the mayor now, that you ran in that special election.
Yes, I did. How did you figure that out?
Well, I guess it's possible you could not and then run since then, but I don't have the timeline yet. So what is it that with a two-thirds pay cut that made you decide to go ahead and not just fill for 4 months, but then to run for mayor, having never run for council or mayor before?
What motivated me was that the only person that qualified to run for mayor was the one that had been removed. In talking with staff and other people, several people didn't want him to come back. So I went over with my forms and sat in the registrar's office until the end of the thing, hoping somebody else would come sign up. And they didn't. So I did.
Okay.
The 2,000 or the 600 are not important items to me. I mean, I'm not wealthy or anything. That, you know,
Nobody does this job in a small town for pay.
Well, I figure that I'm probably making pretty close to the same thing I made when I worked in the Crystal Restaurant in 1966, which was $1.25 an hour. I did get free food there, you know, 3 crystals of fry and a drink every shift.
Okay.
And the good thing about being mayor here is I get to go to a lot of fooding events.
Okay.
So I get to get free food different
places. Did they bring you a crystal every time just to
our crystal closed.
Oh, but, sorry to hear that.
There's a lot of fooding events I go to.
So you do get some food benefits here and there.
There are benefits.
Just like that first job.
Correct. Things hadn't changed much for me. And I make more at 600 a month than I did when I started with the GBI. That was 542 a month.
Yeah, yeah.
My travel allowance is more. I mean, I get $40 a day for food when I travel. And back then, I got $1.50, $2.54, and I had to have receipts for each meal.
You have to do that for these food events. No receipts required.
No receipts required.
Well, I'm sure it's more, like I said, that nobody, I've never had anyone say, you know, I needed a job and this election was open and it was so much money in a small town to council or mayor. So money's not the motivator for sure.
I want to qualify the 2000 just a minute. When it started, at one point, the mayor was doing pretty much city manager job.
Okay.
And so the city manager was hired several years before the mayor was removed.
Okay.
The salary had not changed during that period of time.
So this was an adjustment.
So the salary was based on the fact that the mayor was doing a lot of the management of the government.
Okay.
I don't want to make it sound like
I figured it was something like that because sometimes you bring on someone new and then you don't automatically recalibrate everything. That takes time
to
do.
Only when I got there, recalibrated.
Right. They just noticed at the same time as they brought you on.
I guess I had too nice a suit on that day.
So, he doesn't need a clothing allowance. We're
That's
good.
Right.
Good on that. All right, so that was the beginning of 2018 that you ran for that special election.
Yes, sir.
And then that was to fill the actual remainder of the term.
That's
from
correct.
The previous mayor. And then if my calendar in my mind is correct, then that means you would have had to run for election last November in 2019. Is that right?
That's correct. You are right on that, Mr. Mayor.
So you got picked with no specific desire, reluctantly ran in the special election, and then you did it again. Did you have opposition that time, or were you the only candidate?
Okay. I did have an opponent who was a guy who lived here right at a year, just enough to be qualified.
Okay.
A lot of people asked me, you know, it wasn't unanimous, of course. Everybody didn't want me, but, you know, I was asked by a lot of people who considered to do it. My kids encouraged me to, and so I said, well, I can do 4 more, but I ain't doing any more after this.
So this is the last term?
Yes, sir.
You're definite on that?
Yes, sir. I'm too old to stay around much longer.
Well, usually I would, like I said, the motivation to run the first time is a question that comes up in these interviews. You didn't have a motivation to run the first time because you got appointed in a very unique way. But once you were in and then ran in the special election and now have run for a full term that you're in now, what are some of the things that you have already maybe tried to start, new initiatives or accomplishments? It sounds like there may have been some need for a little bit of restructuring within the way the local government worked. So what are the things you're either already doing, have done, or are looking to accomplish with this full term you're in now?
Well, we started in my last term looking at everything we do. Many of the ordinances and regulations, rules that we have here had not been touched since the 90s. And we have been working real hard to update everything, bring it into a much, much more progressive sense. A lot of ordinances didn't even apply
right.
anymore, the way they were written. So we're trying to professionalize it. We've got a lot of good staff members here. We're trying to do the right thing. We've got a lot of projects going on. If people could see behind you, there's a farmer's market right behind you that's paid with a special local option sales tax money that's going to serve our community, not just as a farmer's market, but as a gathering point. It's got a beautiful facility. We've got a Main Street park behind us with a amphitheater and a magnificent playground that we hope to get open after the virus. We can't open it right now because that's a petri dish for the virus.
So
a lot of things are changing.
Doing things a little bit different right now.
Yeah, we're trying to open the park in the next week so people can get out and walk and use the park. We've got about a mile plus of walking paths in the park right behind City Hall. And again, it's another special local option sales tax thing. We've done a lot of things with our city. We're trying to upgrade our sidewalks and get walking connectivity from all of our subdivisions up into downtown. We've started our food truck nights, first Friday night of every month, which all the food vendors are sold out at the end of each night, usually by 7:15.
Wow.
So I've learned to get food as soon as I get there, so I don't have to walk down to the Mexican restaurant and get me something to come back.
Come early and order early. As soon as you get there.
Yes.
That's a good problem
to have.
The
first couple of times I didn't get to eat anything because everybody was out of food. Because I was out talking and it's like,
right.
I realized
thought
how
you had plenty of time.
Thought I had plenty of food, but we didn't. But it's been great. It's been a great thing. We brought hundreds of people come out each night and just enjoy our downtown. We're moving them back here. We were up in downtown, the old town, which is one of our complications is our traffic. If we'd been counting since we've been sitting here, I would say 118 wheelers have gone by this building. That doesn't count cement trucks, box trucks, dump trucks, low boys pulling tractors. It's just amazing how much traffic uses Georgia Highway 53 right through the center of our town.
Yeah.
And we have trouble with our local businesses because they can't get in or out if they get there. And if you're on one side of the street, you can't get to the other.
Right, because everything's
so
through.
Fast. Yeah. So we're working on trying to we're working with DOT's got a bypass plan for our city on the radar for 2028. And I've been working with them to tell us where the route is. They've got three routes. And if we can't protect the route, we can't have a bypass. If we put subdivisions where they're going to put
right.
the route, we
you a lot know, of
we,
things could happen. And
we can't
you know,
stop it. It's
yeah,
kind of like the outer
years.
Perimeter that they looked at. They were going through hundreds of subdivisions all around the north end, and that's one of the reasons that failed.
Yeah, yeah. Got a plan, and then how you execute the plan and what you don't do between now and then is very important.
Most of my life's been involved planning, whether it's a search warrant or a raid or a convention or a Klan rally or whatever. I've been planning stuff most all my life. So
yeah.
I want to know where it's going to be.
Right.
Once they tell me where it's going to be, build it when you can, but let me know where it's going to be.
Right. Give me one, not three different places it might be. Okay. Well, hey, I want to take a pause here real quick, and I want to do a segment that we do in each of these interviews. It's called the Get to Know You questions I've got for you. It's four questions designed for our audience to get to know you a little better. Maybe someone that thinks they know you will learn something new today on this, and then we'll talk a little more. I'm curious about some of these, the growth of Dawsonville. You just described some of it, and I was curious about that. But Get to Know You questions, the first one of the four. Question number one, do you now or have you ever had a nickname?
Well, during the Georgia Municipal Association event this year, the name tag came to me with the name Bubba on it. I have no idea. My little name tag we put on our jackets and walk around, it said Bubba. But it actually belonged to the mayor of Darien, Georgia.
I know Bubba. Bubba Hodge.
Yes. So, and I just put it on and wore it.
Now,
and he's the first person I met when I got off the elevator to go to the registration area.
Oh, that's funny.
It is funny.
Ironic. So it said his name
and Bub.
But it was City of Dawsonville?
No, it said Darien on it.
Well, it just came
it
in
just
your packet.
Came in my packet. Oh,
okay.
So I
so since
Bubba.
Then, have you been
well,
having
several
just...
people have referred to me as a Bubba. But I have never really had a nickname.
All those years in law enforcement, never had a nickname.
No, not really.
Not at least.
You got to understand, most of my years in law enforcement, I was either a supervisor at GBI or the chief of police. So I don't think most of the employees had the nickname that they were saying out loud.
Oh, they couldn't say it to your face.
Not to my
face.
So I probably had a lot of nicknames.
How about this? This is because I've since you worked did some undercover work. apparently bought your first LSD down in Moultrie.
Like, yes, I did.
Did you get to choose your names?
Yes.
For you? So what was a go-to name for you there?
Mike Jackson.
You just tell everyone you were Mike Jackson.
Yeah, and later on, I didn't know Michael Jackson was going to be that popular.
All right, well, maybe that was the nickname. Mike Jackson, you kind of gave it to yourself. Usually, you don't get to do that.
And you know, it's one of those things that you know, it's easier to remember your first name.
Yeah.
And adapt to your second. My mother's maiden name was Jackson, so it just flowed that I could Mike Jackson or Michael Jackson. On my driver's license, I have Michael Jackson on my undercover driver's license.
You still have your undercover driver's license?
I think I do. Yeah.
With the long hair?
Yes.
You got it in the mayor's office?
No.
I was going to take a picture of that, put it on Facebook.
No.
Okay, never mind.
But thank you anyway.
Absolutely.
What's your nickname? Oh, I'm sorry. You're supposed to ask the question.
Michael Jackson. All right, next question. What is your go-to karaoke song? So let's say you're in it. You're
thought the law and the law won, maybe.
Okay. Well, that was a quick answer. A lot of people get stumped with that one.
I know a lot about music. I know maybe name of four songs.
Well, that's fine. Well, you picked one of the four you knew, I guess.
That's right.
All right. Well, good.
I don't know the song, but I know the name of it, okay?
Well, that's fine. Well, the words...
In
karaoke, they would just come across the screen while you're singing. People say
that
all the time, well, I don't know the words. Well, that's
what karaoke is all about.
People say, well, I can't really sing that good. I said, well, that's not what karaoke is about either.
Well, at one time, the choir leader asked me why I didn't sing in the choir. And I said, well, the reason I don't sing in the choir is I lose my job. And she said, huh? I said, well, I'm the church treasurer. If I sing, there's no money to collect. Everybody's going to
chase
run out the door.
So we're not paying for this today.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Cornbread and sweet milk.
Okay. You knew that one too, real quick.
It's always been my favorite.
No, that's good. Every once in a while, and the karaoke song is usually the one that stumps people.
Okay.
But then this question usually helps them, but you don't even need the help on the karaoke because you had it. If you could attend any concert, any performance of any singer, duo, band, group, any kind of performer of any kind, but they can either be someone that is now dead or alive, whose concert or performance would you want to see?
Yeah. I had to go see Elvis one time live. I guess I'd probably go back to see him again.
When you say had to, you make it sound like not a pleasant experience.
You got to understand, most of the concerts I went to back in the old days
were working
undercover.
Huh?
I mean, like, there was a group that was playing Sweet Home Alabama, and I got in a big fight and somebody bit my knee really bad.
Someone bit your knee while they were singing Sweet Home Alabama?
Yeah, and I've never liked that song much since then.
That's an unpleasant memory.
I lived around for about a week.
Someone bit your knee.
We were fighting, a drug dealer. You know, it was one of those things.
Well, I figured work-related, you did narcotics.
It was work-related, definitely.
Work-related, Sweet Home Alabama industry.
Yes.
Well, thanks for letting me get to know you. I got to know you more than I even thought I would.
Well, it's just me. So is there more questions or is this over?
That was just the get-to-know-you questions. I got more.
Oh, gosh. Wait a minute. I'll get off it. Pretty soon, I think I'd get off duty.
On previous episodes of Small Town Podcast, you've heard me check in with a local leader engaged in the economic development of the small town that I'm visiting. More often than not, that one person is a member of a team of people making things happen in their community to grow economically and maintain a high quality of life. In Dawsonville, we couldn't decide who'd be interviewed for this episode, so I got to talk to two members of the Dawsonville team.
Hey, y'all. I'm Christy Moore, and I'm the president of the Dawson County Chamber of Commerce.
I'm Betsy McGriff. I'm the economic development director for the Dawson County Chamber of Commerce.
All right. So we're trying something new here. I'm usually a one guest person, and now I've got two guests. We wanted to talk. We couldn't decide. They weren't willing to flip a coin. So we're talking with two, and they're just going to lean into the same microphone. So this means Small Town Podcast needs to expand. I need an additional microphone for more guest panels. So Christy and Betsy, let's learn a little bit about you first, because I usually ask people if they're from, you know, in this case, Dawsonville, whatever town I'm profiling. And the answer for both of you is no. So we'll start with Christy. Christy, tell us a little bit about what your background is and how you came to be here.
Sure. So I grew up actually in Marietta, Georgia. So not
a small town.
Not a small town. But both my parents are from small towns. My granddaddy was mayor of Ackworth, so I'm actually from Cobb County, as I say sometimes. But love small towns. And my entire career, I have lived in a small town, went to school in Athens, and fell in love. Most of my best friends are from small towns. And really loved going home with them on the weekend and just found a love for it. And so I ended up starting my career in Southwest Georgia in Blakely. And I think a lot of people think I grew up there, and I don't correct them because I love that town. And so I started there as chamber president, and I was there for about 2 years and then moved to Dawson County, where I am now, so almost polar opposite end of the state. I will admit that part of it is because it brought me closer to Athens, because I love seeing my Georgia Bulldogs play football, but moved up here, and I have been in Dawson County as the chamber president for about 7.5 years.
And Betsy, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I actually grew up in a small town, so I grew up very close to Metter. So you've been there.
Yep,
everything's
right.
Better. I think we can all agree on that. but so lived most of my life in small towns and spent some time also in Southwest Georgia. So my time and Christy's time never overlapped in South Georgia, but spent some time in Cairo. Loved it down there. Some great people. Then had the opportunity to come up to North Georgia. And this was not a part of Georgia that I was very familiar with or had ever lived in, but I have lived in Southeast Georgia and Southwest Georgia. So now I am in Northeast Georgia. So if I can just make it over to Northwest Georgia, maybe I can get the trifecta.
It's like you're playing a game of bingo with Georgia geography, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And every place is just a little bit different. So it's very interesting to me. The numbers and the statistics on paper show that Dawsonville is very similar to Cairo, but they are very different towns. So it's been interesting to navigate that process.
Well, let's talk about, because and actually our conversation we had even before we got in front of some microphones and hit the record button, we've talked about the some of the growing pains, and I'm talking about that with Mayor Eason in our interview, but also Betsy, you and I talked about this before, just the vast diversity of what Dawsonville and the surrounding area has to offer. So I guess just give a pitch about what all's going on, and some of that because of the growth, and some of that just because of the natural assets it had already.
There are some things that we're known for as a community. I think Awesome Bill from Dawsonville comes to mind. And of course, I know you and the mayor talked about moonshine. And those are things that we, of course, love and certainly claim. And then the outlets, a lot of people know us because of North Georgia Premium Outlets. But what I found was very impressive coming from other small town Georgia is the quality of life, the surprising things that we have. So, and you know, other small towns, you may have to drive an hour or even more to get the things that you need. We have those resources right here. So any shopping, grocery store you could possibly want, we have. We have a Publix, which if you live in a big town, you might laugh at that. But in a small town, having a Publix is a big deal.
Osceola doesn't have a Publix yet. We're still working
still
on that.
Still working
we
on
it. We got to go to Tifton to go to Publix.
Exactly. That's my exact point, actually. And so our resources here are phenomenal. So in addition to retail and that type of thing, we have excellent medical resources. We are well positioned between two different excellent hospital systems. So that's Northeast Georgia Health System and Northside Hospital. And so that has been a great benefit to our citizens. We have a lot of their ancillary services here, which is great because you don't have to drive far away. But then just the beauty of the nature here. So we, of course, are partly on Lake Lanier. We have 40 miles of shoreline. A lot of people don't realize that, and I'm biased, but we have the prettiest part of the lake. It's the quietest part of the lake, and it is beautiful. And then, of course, we have natural rivers. We have some great fly fishing. And if you are a hiker or an outdoor person at all, this is really your paradise because it's untouched. And a great thing about just our county and community in general is that almost a fifth of it is preserved and will never change. So it's in protected lands. We have National Forest, Amicalia Falls, all in one place, which I think is pretty unique and makes us really special and is the reason a lot of people want to move here. When we're talking about growing pains, we are growing, but we do try to keep perspective that even at right now around 26,000, we could double and still be a small community and by most standards. And so we are really dedicated to keeping that small town feel.
That's interesting you say that about, because we're talking about the growth and the development and how many new people are moving here and building houses. But it's almost like you've got a buffer because of some of that preserved land. You know that the development has at least kind of a stopping point or a buffer. You know, it keeps it from future, I guess, overdevelopment.
Yes, it absolutely does. And that's something we talk about a lot. And even, you know, the tallest building in our entire community is our courthouse. It's four stories. We don't have any other four-story buildings. We have one three-story building. So, you got to think, unless all of a sudden we started building up, which I don't think our city council nor our county commission is going to be on board for that. Neither would we be. We're going to remain relatively rural and small. But I will say we're really blessed with leadership that is very intentional. And as we grow, is doing everything we can to make sure we keep that small town feel. That I do believe that takes intention, and we're blessed to have that here.
Well, Betsy, since you're the newer member of the economic development team here, what's your perspective? Since you didn't, you're not born and raised here, you came from somewhere else. You talked about all the different places in Georgia where you've lived and worked. So, what is it that drew you here? Obviously, it was more than just the job. And what could someone that wanted to come visit, or maybe think about moving here, what were some of the amenities that they would be drawn to as well?
Well, to be honest with you, I had never actually been to Dawsonville until I came on my job interview. So it was a little bit of an adventure. And I went back home and I rode around just a little bit. And I told my husband, I said, you know, I really think we should explore. And I'm a little bit of a data nerd. I think Christy and I share that in common. So, you know, I'm going to the sort of the CCRPI scores that the State Board of Education puts out, and I'm looking at the kids count data that Georgia Family Connection puts out, and the numbers look really good. And I'm like, but wait a minute, this town is only like 2,000 people and the county is only 25,000 people. That's not a thing. I mean, most of these places are much larger, like some of our neighbors to the south. How does this happen? So we come up here and we're going to explore a little bit, and we ride through this vibrant commercial corridor on Highway 400, and you have, you know, everything North Georgia Premium Outlets, any sort of shopping and grocery destinations, as Christy mentioned, and you're like, well, yeah, this is nice, but this is sort of everywhere USA. So we ride a little farther, and so we come down Highway 53, and we come into Dawsonville, and I'm like, oh, this is really cute. Like, this is a cute little mountain town with the courthouse, and you know, it's just the little historic feel. And so then we see a sign that says Amicalola Falls State Park. And we say, okay, well, let's go a little farther. So it sort of draws you in. So you go from sort of this commercial corridor that's really convenient to a historic small town all the way to, you know, national forest and wilderness. And you can really even get off the grid, so to speak, at places like the Linfoot Hike Inn, which is a backcountry lodge that we have here. So it's really the best of all possible worlds. And it really does draw you in, because although I grew up in a small town as a country girl, I say that I like to live in sight of the nearest CVS. So I do live near the commercial corridor, but I also have the opportunity, you know, instead of having to drive 15 minutes, I say, to go to the store or to CVS or somewhere like that, I can actually take 15 minutes drive and be at a waterfall or on a beautiful hike. I'm also not an outdoorsy person, so I've discovered that side of myself coming to Dawsonville. Our tourism arm, we say, our slogan is sort of choose your own adventure. And you really can do that here. So somebody wants to come here, you can really envision yourself living here, because we have a little bit of something for everybody. Great school system. So when I got here, you know, I had done all the research and have school-aged children and was really looking for that as a critical piece of where I was going to live. And as the economic developer, I also have to sell the community. That's totally my job. And we broke ground, I think I'd been here about a month, on a new college and career academy. And within a year, it was up and going, running, delivering content to students. And that just really spoke to me about the leadership of this community, that they would come together to invest in a facility like that and do it so quickly and efficiently. And it wasn't just a building, but it was sort of a paradigm shift in the way we were educating our students. And that has been, you know, so refreshing. And then that gives me something to go out and tell businesses about, which is super exciting. And that doesn't happen everywhere. I think that takes a lot of commitment and leadership.
So we've talked a lot about people coming to move here and all the houses and the potential development there. But what about as far as like the business, the industrial development part of Dawsonville and the surrounding community? Speak to that just a little bit, because I'm sure there's some stuff going on there as well.
One thing that might be surprising about our community is that we have a truly thriving business community filled with really unique entrepreneurs and great stories that we could talk to you about for hours today. But one awesome story we have is a company that just moved here, and Betsy played a pivotal role in helping bring them here. So I'll let her tell you about it.
We located a company through the help of the Georgia Department for Economic Development. That company is called Hellman Chang. They are craftsmen, really. They make fine furniture, beautiful, beautiful, very super high-end custom order wood furniture. I actually got the call from the state. I had been here about 2 weeks, so it's a great case of fake it till you make it. But I had a lot of help with great partners. Being a part of the chamber, I was really able to lean on partners who had been here for a long time and make that process seamless for this company. But they were really looking for somewhere that had a history of craftsmen, craft manufacturers, and we have a good base in that. They were able to take an existing building, slide right in there, not only find an existing workforce, but help us grow our workforce. So on the day they opened, they had a work-based learning student from our college and career academy. And that was really exciting to me to see them just jump in with both feet. And it was really great for them because they'd come from Brooklyn, New York, which is almost unimaginable.
Yeah.
For me, of a way of doing business. And so they were kind of shocked that, you know, in one phone call, they could talk to the superintendent of schools or the president of the bank, or we could just sit down with the planning and zoning office. And it was really easy to do business.
You mean they didn't have that kind of nimbleness and economic development in Brooklyn?
all
the focused attention on that one company?
not so much. Yeah. You know, and they were a small company for Brooklyn, but they're a really big deal for us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not only do we have this thriving retail sector, as most communities, that's sort of what you see when you walk in the front door. But if you, as I say, if you go around back, you can really see these industrial businesses, small job shops. So I think our largest manufacturer is 250 employees. So we have a lot of, again, it's entrepreneurial, but entrepreneurial manufacturing that are supporting things throughout the region. And that's really a great sweet spot to be in. I don't need, you know, a 10,000 acre mega site or anything like that. I can plug these folks in, and we're still really small enough. Again, this being the small town podcast, we're small enough to be able to offer that sort of one-to-one, face-to-face, let me find you a resource kind of service. And that's not a position that every community is in. So I think sometimes folks think, well, gosh, if I was only in Fulton County, if I was only in DeKalb and all the resources, and they're great, but they do their thing. And our thing is personal touch, hand-to-hand, connection-to-connection. As a chamber, we say we're a big family, and we're still blessed to be a small enough community that we can do those kinds of things. And I think business appreciates that. I know our partners in Hillman Chang certainly appreciated that because that was a different experience for them.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, for more stories like this and more of what's going on in Dawsonville and Dawson County, where should people go?
Yeah, well, you could probably tell that we have a lot of stories to tell. And I like to say in our community, you really can have your cake and eat it too. It doesn't matter if you're industry or a local boutique or anything. We're here to support you. And our whole community really has that mentality. So you can find out more about us from a business perspective at Dawson.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, all social media platforms at Dawson Chamber. But you can also, we'd love for you to come visit and see Amicalola Falls or come spend your money at the outlets. And you can find us at Destination Dawsonville on Facebook and all other social media platforms.
And they have a very nice welcome center where I met them today. So thank you guys so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm.
Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital media production and marketing for small businesses in small towns like ours. We believe that small businesses and rural communities are the key to sustained growth and high quality of life. And we know that now, more than ever before, small businesses need someone that they can trust to help with the very necessary aspect of digital marketing to help your business grow and find new customers. Your digital presence is now just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media, email lists and newsletters, and making sure that all of those things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and the county lines so that you can focus on keeping your community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Caitlin, Bailey, and Matt can guide you into growing your business, go to irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS Irwinomics.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
Well, getting back to Dawsonville, you've already mentioned kind of some of the, I'll call them growing pains. You mentioned traffic and some of the things you're doing there. But if you can, and I know you were actually part of the migration, the way you described your story about kind of moving farther north from the South Atlanta area as your career went on. But talk about some of the things that have gone on in Dawsonville, and I guess really you're the only incorporated city in Dawson County. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so y'all are kind of the hub of things, but there's still plenty going on. So you can talk about Dawsonville specifically, but obviously that kind of includes the outlying areas as well. What's that been like, and what are some of the, I'm sure there's some good aspects of it because growth is generally considered good. Your revenues are, I can tell by the fanciness of your council chamber that you've got a bigger budget than the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. But then
we should.
But also that's gonna come with some growing pains, with some, I won't say downsides, but certainly challenges you have to deal with. So speak to that, and if you've got some, you mentioned having some numbers and kind of a little bit of a historical take on that.
Well, I think what most people don't understand is what the growth is here in Dawsonville and what we can do and can't do about it. For example, we have probably 100 homes under construction, maybe 200 homes under construction right now.
Wow.
All of this zoning for all of these was done back in the early 2000s. Mm. There was no sunset provision on the in the ordinance that allowed you to, if you didn't start within 2 years, or it fell off.
Right.
So people are blaming us for growth, but we have not been.
But it's based on things put in place 20 years ago.
But what we have done is we've tried to manage it a little better. In several of the subdivisions, we've actually been able to cut some of the numbers down, change some of the designs that make it more or less dense.
Mm-hmm.
Our water and sewer and our schools can handle it. We've got plenty of growth capability in all of those. But we have an opportunity to try to structure it so it's not as bad a burden.
Yeah.
We've probably got another 600 to 700 homes that are on the books. If they want to pull permits for right now, they could. Houses up here are selling as they are being built, some of them before they're being built.
Mm.
We don't have a huge inventory of houses for sale.
Yeah.
We are priced in the two, I guess there's some coming on right now in the 229s, 239s to the 290s, the 300 is our price range. We've got a lot of subdivisions. But if you think about the practicality of the city having growth, people don't want it in their neighborhood, but if you're going to concentrate your growth, where's a better place to do it besides the city?
Yeah.
Your services, your schools, your everything is right here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've got 4 schools in the city. We got Lanier Tech. You know, we've got a lot of things that it's convenient. So if your school bus has to run down and pick them up, the subdivision, they should bring them right back up here.
Yeah.
We got a lot going. When I ran for office in 2018 in March, I think it was an election, I think we had right at 2,200 registered voters. And when I ran in November of 19, we had 2,800 registered voters.
So I'm pretty sure that population number is going to be a little higher than 2,600 when the census is all
over. That's correct. So we went up almost 600 voters in about an 18-month period.
Yeah.
So, you know, our growth here is just tremendous. We issue between 20 and 30 new water and sewer packages to new residents a month.
Mm-hmm.
The growth is phenomenal.
And it sounds like just from what I'm just kind of listening to what you're saying and the numbers you're kind of throwing out on, it's actually accelerating in the last 2 or 3 years.
Gosh.
So it's not like this has been a steady annual growth for the last 10 or 15 years. It's been growth for that long, but accelerating growth in the last 2 to 3 with all those housing numbers you just gave
out.
And the voter registration numbers.
Yes. Well, you know, several of the housing had started, but they had stopped in 07 or 08. And they have picked back up now full force.
Yeah.
To the tune of several extra 100 homes. There's a couple of subdivisions on the south side of town, one that's, I think it's 97 or 112 homes. And their goal is to have 40 built by May. And they just started in January, and there's probably 20 already up.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not finished, of course, but the structures are up, the siding's on them. There's another one with 230 homes just below it that's starting up now. So we've got subdivisions everywhere in the city.
Yeah. So with all that, let me ask this question because this was not where you were born and raised. So that's my story too in Ocilla. didn't grow up there, don't have family roots, five generations that have farmed the land in the area or anything like that. So I'm kind of asking someone who's got my same experience and maybe perspective on this. In the midst of all that growth, how do you try to kind of still maintain, I guess, that small town feel? Because I imagine since most of the growth, not all necessarily, but most of the growth means people are coming from outside and coming in. And so that's going to change the culture in what could be very positive ways and ways that create some tensions. So how do you or how are you or what are the challenges if it's a challenge trying to keep the same feel or is it just kind of overrun with now we want to be a bigger city and a more metropolitan feel or that kind of thing? So what's going on in Dawsonville and how is that being managed?
No, we're not trying to become a big city. And most of the people here, I'd say probably 90%+, want it to maintain as low a profile as it can.
Right.
We don't have.
Well, that's kind of what you wanted to do. You kept moving to a smaller because you want that small town feel.
Yes.
That showed you, the pattern of your move shows me that without you having to say that directly. So I imagine most people that have come here, it's because wherever they were before was too big.
Correct. That's correct. And that is exactly why I left Atlanta.
Yeah.
And why I was willing to leave for Scythe County.
Right.
My wife was born and raised there. And, you know, it was her home and her family home. And she was born in the hospital. It was where City Hall is and coming now. Right there on Main, right on the square at the old courthouse, where the old courthouse was, which is now the third courthouse at that site. You know, they burned the first one down, tried to destroy some evidence in the murder of a deputy and radio operator.
What?
And then they put trailers in for a few years, and then they built a new courthouse, and now it's the sheriff's office.
And they built the courthouse somewhere else, yeah.
So, I've seen a lot of change there, but I don't think we're going to have that kind of change here. We don't have a lot of businesses here. That's the biggest problem I see is that we can't get our business property owners to do much work on their businesses because they can't keep tenants because of the traffic. And there's no walkability in our downtown. We've got designs and plans to provide walkability downtown. But if you drive through the square around the courthouse, the old courthouse here, I mean, it's just wide open. Traffic's running fast as it can, and it's dangerous. So there's no place we can even put sidewalks downtown because it's all on the highway right away. The right away goes to the front of our buildings. So they don't even, if they want to have something in their yard sale out in front of their business, they have to get a permit from the DOT for it, not from us.
That's unique.
So it's kind of different. So, you know, we're just, we're challenged by the traffic. And we want to make it as walkable as possible. That's why the farmer's market and the park are so important to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can provide a place that we can have the food truck nights, we can have family-oriented events. You know, we bring bouncy houses in, we have cornhole boards, we have face painting, we have all kinds of vendors.
Yeah.
Our farmer's market is real progressive during our things. So they bring stuff and sell fresh vegetables and honey. By the way, I need some honey. I'm almost to the bottom of my last honey. So if you're listening to this, I need honey. So, anyway, we want it to be as friendly as we can. And like, as we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of sidewalk construction going on. We're trying to connect everything to the downtown, which also connects to this.
Okay.
I mean, our junior high school is right here, right across the street from us. The main high school is over on the other side of the perimeter highway, where the one traffic light that's not in the city, but the city bought and paid for, so it'd be safer. So, you know, we've got a lot going, but we want to try to make it as friendly as we can. We can't put sidewalks on 53,
right?
Because it's a state highway.
Yeah,
we can't even put crosswalks on 53 because the speeds are too high.
Well, it sounds like even in the midst of the traffic, and obviously, and every town has some kind of at least state highway, if not U.S. highway, running through it, which is usually why it's a city in the first place, because it ends up being the hub of activity. But except for that restriction, which that means that's state right away, you're making the efforts to kind of keep things connected. And that is that small town neighborhood kind of feel.
That's correct. And we also we've been working with our state representative, Kevin Tanner, who's actually chairman of DOT.
Oh, that's right. Transportation chair. Yeah.
So Kevin has been working with us, and we've got a resolution down there. It may be stymied because of the change to rename Georgia Highway 9 from the Forsyth County line to Dawsonville as Thunder Road.
Okay.
Because I don't know if we talked about it before, but there's some moonshine going on down here.
I think we mentioned that near the beginning of this conversation.
Okay. Yeah. You know, a lot of places, you know, at the Georgia Municipal Association, everybody was touting, they're the fastest growing county here, and they're our city here, and they're the fastest growing in their area. And when it got to me, I said, I'm from Dawson, but we're just the fastest driving people. So, you know, we got Bill and Chase Elliott up here, and so we drive pretty fast up in Dawsonville.
Yep.
We're not growing as fast as y'all, but we've got fast
driving. You're driving faster. Yeah. Well, Mayor, as we start to wrap this up, I just want to give you the same opportunity I've given all my guests and just let you speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit or maybe they should come move to one of these nice new houses getting built in Dawsonville, Georgia.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's a great place to live, but if you want to buy a house, you better plan ahead. So come on up, buy it, because if you don't get here quick, it's gone.
You got to buy it before it's built if you want to live here.
That's correct. But there's a lot of things good about Dawsonville that people don't even know about. I was asked one day by the local media, I said, what's the hidden gem of Dawsonville? And I said, of course, it's the Atlanta Motor Sports Park. And do you know what that is, Mr. Mayor?
No. What's the Atlanta Motor Sports Park?
Well, that's a
country. I've heard of the Atlanta Motor Speedway, but that's on the other side of Atlanta.
That's south of Atlanta. This Atlanta Motor Sports Park is a country club for cars.
Okay.
They don't have a golf course, but they got cars. They got about 500-plus members. It's a very, very high-end driving facility. They've got go-karts over there that will run between 55 and 70 miles an hour open to the public. It's just an absolute beautiful facility. And nobody really knows about it. The 500 members, I don't know if any of them are from here. They got people from all over the world there.
Wow.
They have races. They had the Legends race here about a few months back, and people flew in with their cars from Europe to race. So it's a pretty interesting facility.
Yeah.
I've taken a lot of people out there to see, and it's impressive. The go-karts are, in fact, most impressive. If you want to drive fast, that's the way to go. There's a lot going on here in Dawsonville. I mean, we've got the Aristocraft Boat Factory here in Dawsonville. You've heard of Chris Craft.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, not everybody could afford a Chris Craft back in the 40s and 50s. So Aristocraft started a boat manufacturing company in Atlanta. They build wooden boats, and they still build them today right here in the city of Dawsonville. We've got a lot going on for us. We've got the Motor Sports Park. We've got the boat place. We've got the farmer's market. We've got the Main Street Park. And depending on financing with splash money, we'll probably have a big, nice dog park here because we want to make it a place where families can come and enjoy it. Our Main Street Park will have an amphitheater. We're looking at some concerts there, some free and some paid concerts. And next spring, we're going to have a fair, it looks like, here in Dawsonville. There's not many events in going on in the spring up in the mountains because everybody's, you know, waiting for the apples to grow so they can harvest them and have an apple festival or a moonshine festival, which we have here every year in October. So don't forget our moonshine festival. It's a two-day event. There'll be tens of thousands of people here in the city. We have a lot of old cars here. We have the Racing Hall of Fame. It's an amazing place. This is the history. The history of this is where NASCAR started here in Dawson County. So we've got a lot of things that are available to the public. I mean, our moonshine distillery is open generally, and they sell moonshine here. You can buy it in different places around town, the state. They send it out, so it's there. And you know, we've got nice people. I'll give you an example. I walked around, knocked on doors when I ran for office. Not much fun. You know about that, Mr. Mayor.
I've done it once or twice.
But I will tell you this. I was invited into homes to sit down, offered meals, offered water or soft drinks, you know, offered to let me use the restroom in their home. I walked up to a house and knocked on the door. That's the kind of people you find here. We have people that moved here from Forsyth County, Hall County, Cherokee County, just places we want to get away from the clutter and the crowds there. And it's everybody's pretty welcoming. It's a nice place where you say hi to people when you meet them at the post office. And if you say hi, how you doing, then you got a conversation. But I really appreciate you coming up. I hope that I've been informative to you. This is a great place to be. It's a great place to live. It's a great place to visit. And the Outlet Mall, although it's closed today because of the virus gear, is a great resource. It's not in the city, but it's a great resource for anybody that wants to buy something because everything you can buy is over there. And we want you to come visit it and stop by Dawsonville while you're here.
All right. Well, Mayor Mike Eason, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you, sir.
And let's go get some of those moonshine samples.
Have a safe drive home. Let's know what color car are you driving so the troopers will know.
It was really good talking to you, Mayor.
You too.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Mike Eason for talking with me today. I also want to thank Christy Moore, Betsy McGriff, and the Dawson County Development Authority and Chamber of Commerce for supporting this episode. I hope everyone out there will continue to be safe and take care of yourselves and each other, and I hope you'll find a way to support small towns like Dawsonville, either through a visit if possible, or by engaging with them through social media and supporting their local businesses through e-commerce. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for Season 3, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Southern Mercantile, and Public Software for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.